The question was asked, how come in the written text we have glaring omissions of facts and details that change the picture, that the oral Torah fills in and the written Torah leaves them out and they change the whole story? And you mentioned the story of David and Bathsheba, the story of Reuven and Bilhah. The Torah leaves out details, so to speak, that the oral tradition tells us, and we're left wondering, and then the oral tradition comes and fills it in. So why does the Torah do that? And I think that there are multiple answers which complement one another. They're not either or, but rather all of the above. So let's Shabbat Shalom. So let's analyze some of the answers, okay? I want to start with the one that's a little bit least relevant, okay? Because it's a very important point. The Medrash writes in Psikta de Rav Kahana that Hashem knew that non-Jews would translate the Torah. Hashem knew that the written Torah would be accessed by the world at large. And so Hashem made it so that there was an oral Torah, and that oral Torah you cannot understand without a Rebbe, without a tradition, without joining a yeshiva, without being a part of the Jewish heritage. And Hashem purposely made it so that when you learn the Torah, if you're going to try to say, I'm the chosen people, look, I can do this too, if you will take the Torah and try to apply it without the oral tradition, you'll end up stuck. And if you think about it, then you end up stuck not only because the laws don't work without the oral tradition. We have ample example, and that's what I started the class of David and Bathsheba. Like Torah says on Shabbos, Al yetze ish mi mekomo. Don't leave your place. If you don't have oral tradition, that's it. Sit down. All of Shabbos you spend in your seat or in bed. Compare that to a Jewish Shabbos. Go try and apply the Torah without oral tradition. No kiddush. Zachorit yom ha-shamat. Remember the holy day to sanctify it. What does that mean? Let's remember. Ah, our oral tradition says make kiddush Friday night. The whole family gathers. We take up wine. So the Torah in its laws is not understandable without the oral tradition, but also in its stories. And that's part of what makes our heritage special. Because if you're going to try to read the Akedah without the tradition, so you read the Akedah and you walk away and say, why should I adhere to this tradition? Why should I join this religion? The patriarch of this religion was ready to slaughter his own son. Why should I do this? Why should I look up to such a person? You start reading the tradition, you start understanding what really happened there. You say, oh, wow, Avraham Avinu, amazing. But if you don't have that, then you don't even have heroes in the Torah. You read the Torah and you really look at the people and say, why should I go with this? So the Torah, on many levels, was written in a way which, without tradition, you really, you're not going to get it right. So that's just one point of reference from the Psikta de Rav Kahana. The Psikta is talking about the Torah at large, that Hashem purposely made it that the nations would not really be able to access the Torah. It's just, again, I think this is the least relevant answer.
I understand, and I don't question that. I have defended the oral law many times out of Pesukim being, for instance, the Navi.
We'll get there. We'll get there.
I don't question that at all, but why?
So one answer we just got. There's a point where by making the Torah inaccessible, then even if you translate the Torah, you don't really have access to it. If there wasn't this aspect that you must have the oral Torah for the written Torah, then everyone would go around copying it and saying, look, like they say today. You know, a lot of people say they're the chosen people, and a lot of what they're doing is copying the Torah. So that's one thing. I'm just saying that's the least relevant. Let's move forward. It says you have to keep Shabbat, but it doesn't say what Shabbat is. It doesn't say 39 tasks. What does it say? Don't plow. It says rest. What should I do to rest? Maybe I should sleep off Shabbos. Reading from the Chumash. You don't even know how to write a Chumash, a Torah scroll. Who says you should write a Torah scroll? It says in the Torah, write down this song. Our tradition is that's a mitzvah to write the Torah. We have an oral tradition from Moshe from Sinai, how the parchment should be made, how the ink should be, how you write a Sefer Torah. But if you don't have that, so who said you should write it down even? Maybe you should just write the song of Ha'azinu. But let's take your story of King David. You ask, why wasn't it written? Why weren't all the details written about Bathsheba being 7 years old and that every soldier wrote a divorce contract when they went out to war? When was that story written? It was written by Shmuel the prophet. So it was written a few years after it happened. Everyone knew the facts. Everyone knew because King David had sent a letter, and that letter was made available to the public by Yoav, as we discussed in class. Everyone knew because if every soldier was writing a divorce contract, then everyone knew it. So you're asking, why didn't the Navi write it? And I want to ask, why did the Navi write anything? The Navi's writing down something which everyone knows. It was public information. And everyone knew all the details of the story. Today we read the story and our source is the Navi. But then we have to understand that the Navi is coming to teach us something else. Meaning, Shmuel is writing it. Now Shmuel doesn't live too much past David. Okay, so let's say it's written a century later, but everyone knew the facts. This was ongoing. Everyone was writing a divorce contract when they went out to war. Everyone knew the story of David. So the Navi is writing with a message for eternity. And when you look at the text and you say, hey, there's a glaring omission of fact, then you have to realize that was on purpose. Because for that generation, he wasn't writing the story. Everyone knew the story. But he was writing for that generation and for future generations with an inner message. Now the question is, what is that inner message? We'll see in a minute, but I want to say point two before we go to that. So point one is that the things were written in those generations where people basically knew the stories. But point two is that if you really know how to look closely at the verses, you'll be able to see it in the verses. You can look at the text and understand that Bathsheba was 7 years old, but you have to look closely at the text. The text in Chronicles in Divrei Hayamim, the text in Psalms, which says that Achitophel did not live out half his days, so that makes him passing away before the age of 35. And if you look in Divrei Hayamim, you understand, even in Kings, you understand that Bathsheba, Bat Eliam, Ben Achitophel, so you see that she was the granddaughter of Achitophel when the whole story happens, if you just look at the text. And the verse in Psalms says he didn't outlive 35. So how did he have a granddaughter? How come he was still alive after the story of David and Bathsheba? He dies at 35. And that's when? That's with the whole story of Avshalom. Avshalom's already 40. King David has a 40-year-old son. I'm saying so. And the whole idea of King Solomon being 12, for example, can also be worked out from within the text. You have to know how to read the text. You're saying, why isn't it written? And I'm saying a lot of it is written. A lot of it can be derived from the text if we only know how to read the text. I'll give you an example. The idea that Bathsheba could have a child at age 7, I figured out before I saw it in Talmud. When I was learning the text and I started figuring out how old Judah's children were, working with the text, Chumash Rashi, I came to the conclusion that Yehuda's children, Er, Onan, Shela, were marrying Tamar at the age of 7 or 8. And that was before I learned the Talmud in Sanhedrin that does the math and figures out that in ancient times people could get pregnant at age 7, 8. So I'm saying there's a lot that could be figured out from within the text. To say it's omitted? No. It's written in a way. You just have to sit and see more pieces of the puzzle to see it. But now let's go back to the first point. And the Talmud says that if Shlomo would have known that the Navi would have written about him that the women turned his heart from Hashem, he would have changed everything in his life. Shlomo was faithful to Hashem. Yet the Navi writes it as he went down a pagan path. And our sages say, he didn't literally go serve idols, but the fact that his wives were doing it behind his back and he wasn't actively stopping it, the Navi purposely words it that way. So wait, if I have the written text and I have the oral tradition, so why is King Solomon bothered that the written text says he was very naughty? The oral tradition fixes it. Ah, but there is a relevant to the written text. The written text has a relevance. We have Pshat, Remez, Drush, Sod. We have four levels of interpretation in the verse. Now, if we add to that that the text was written at a time where people knew the story, you didn't need oral tradition. People were still around. People knew the story. And then you go ahead and write a text. You, the prophet, are taking David HaMelech, the Mashiach of Am Yisrael, and you're writing the text in such a gory way. Think of what message that sends. That's a message that, yeah, there are answers. Yeah, there are good excuses. And there are good, legitimate, technical, legal answers why it was legitimate. But God says, I'm writing it down in a much more vile way. And that's part of the punishment of David. That David does not get exonerated in the text. And when anyone reads that text, and especially in those generations, think of what's happening. People know the excuses. People know the technical, legal details why King David didn't sin. And they see that the prophet doesn't write that. The prophet omits that. And for generations, that's what's going to be written. Think of what that does to the people.
Yeah, that makes the punishment much, much worse.
Right.
In the eyes of the reader of that generation.
But that's a punishment to David. Our sages said, David begged Hashem, don't write it that way. Please, don't publicize what I did. And Hashem said, no. The Talmud says that David pleaded and begged and cried and prayed, please don't write it down. And Hashem said, no, this is getting written. Now think of what the message in that is. What do people see? Hashem says, yes, there are answers, and you'll have that in the oral tradition. But see, from my perspective, I'm going to write it down as the most vile crime. And even though David is my chosen one, there's a tremendous message to the people in that. So your question, why was this written in Pshat this way? It's the other way around. It's written in Pshat this way to vilify David. So that's part of David's punishment. That David knows that, and people will see it, and people will say, okay, this is the oral tradition, this is what the text says. And the text is telling you, on some level, this is what Hashem feels about it. Hashem says, this is dead wrong. Ah, it's right. He has all the technical details right. But so it's to a large degree, the text being written this way is an expression of heaven's displeasure with David. That's what we are taught. So even though within the text you could find it, and people in that generation knew it, but the message to people in that generation and the message for all time is the gravity of what was wrong. Our tradition says, but there were many things that weren't as bad as it seems. Yeah, but look at how Hashem words it. And that's part of the punishment. That's part of Hashem saying, this is not the way it should be.